From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Al Letson Reveals, a podcast special where I have in-depth conversations with people I find interesting, and hopefully you will too. So recently, all over the internet, a very frank conversation about Black women's experiences went viral. It started after Representative Maxine Waters said this in Congress.
When we fight against this president and we point out how dangerous he is for this society and for this country, we're fighting for the democracy. We're fighting for America.
Fox News played that clip on their morning show, Fox and Friends, and they asked commentator Bill O'Reilly what he thought about it. He said this.
I didn't hear a word she said. I was looking at the James Brown wig.
And on that same day, White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer told veteran African-American reporter April Ryan this.
But you know what? You're asking me a question, and I'm going to answer it, which is the president, I'm sorry, please stop shaking your head again.
Plenty of women heard dismissiveness and disrespect in these comments, and they're sick of it. So they stepped forward to share their experiences of everyday ingrained discrimination using the hashtag Black Women at Work. Some are called being mistaken for the janitor or a criminal, or told their hair was just way too wild. Our guest today is Kim Foster. Kim says she didn't have an at-work story to share because she spent most of her adult life working for herself.
And a part of that decision was because I've seen so many other brilliant, incredibly talented and capable Black women be so abused in the workplace. And so I don't have a lot of experience being a Black woman at work, but I do have a lot of experience being a Black woman at school, a Black woman in the shopping mall, you know, a Black woman on the street. And a lot of these experiences that I've seen Black women share in the Black Women at Work hashtag are transferable to my experiences in all other realms of life.
Kim is the founder and editor-in-chief of For Harriet, an online collection of commentary by Black women. Her work has drawn tens of thousands of followers. What really pulled me in are her video commentaries, like this one about feminist history, celebrating itself while ignoring its own racism.
White feminists, come closer, listen very closely to me. Read a book. Some Lord, some Hooks, some Walker, something. Because we can't go on like this. This is why we don't trust y'all.
Kim published her writing for more than 5 years on For Harriet since her undergraduate days at Harvard. But she told me it took her a long time to get up the guts to say what she thought on camera and post that online.
I was wary of doing it because of the consequences of being visible. I mean, if you are a Black woman and you are vocal about issues that are potentially controversial, I mean, you know, feminism and, you know, reproductive rights and justice, you can expect to get rape threats and death threats and just all sorts of really crazy negativity. And so I wanted to do it, but I was afraid.
I want to talk a little bit about feminism, but in a couple different lenses. And I want to start off with feminism in the Black community. Do you feel like there's been an awakening of Black feminism? Because, you know, just looking back at the history of African people in America, Black women have always been kind of at the center of the struggle, but not really the center of the spotlight. And it just feels like in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, you're beginning to see Black women be more in the spotlight, like actually being seen.
So I absolutely think that Black feminist thought and activism that is rooted in Black feminist politics has become more visible over the past 5 to 10 years. And that is absolutely a result of social media and the internet. Absolutely, unequivocally. The way that Black feminists have been able to congregate in spaces that we run via blogs, and then, of course, from the blogosphere that's moved now to Twitter and Facebook, where we can have real-time conversations about these issues, about our politics, really theorizing on the spot.
What do you think the general vibe is in the Black community? Maybe specifically like with Black men, but also like with Black women who maybe don't sign on to the idea of feminism.
There's a certain kind of conversation about Black feminism that I just don't think is ever going to go away. That when we are emphasizing focus on Black women's issues, Black women's struggles, that detracts from our unity as a Black community, as a Black people. And a lot of people still try to put forth this argument that we are causing division and that we are weakening ourselves, weakening our stance, particularly when we are trying to fight state violence, right, in the current movement against police brutality. There's always going to be a subsection of people who just don't get it, who just think that we need to do one thing at a time, that we need to be Black first, essentially. As a semi-visible Black feminist, it's an occupational hazard. You know that whenever you talk about Black feminism or Black women's issues or the need for us to dedicate community resources to taking care of Black women, that is going to be the type of response that you're going to get.
Moving on and kind of widening the lens out, how do you feel like Black feminism is looked at from white feminists? That's a deep breath. What's behind it?
You know, in much the same way that when we talk to Black people or Black men about the need to dedicate our time and our resources to caring and supporting Black women intentionally, there is a similar sort of pushback that you get from a certain demographic of white feminists when we say, make sure that you are not forgetting Black women. Make sure that you're honoring and respecting Black women's work and our intellectual property. And that kind of response from white feminists a lot of time is, well, we're all just women, right? We need to come together. But fortunately, social media has also been really important in helping white feminists understand the importance and the centrality of resistance that works. And so increasingly, particularly over the past couple of years, more and more white feminists have come to understand that we are not going to get anywhere as women, as people, if we don't recognize that our struggles against sexism and racism and classism, that they're all interlinked, and that we have to make sure that we're trying to tackle them simultaneously and not just think about, you know, the white woman's experience as central.
I'm curious what your thoughts were about the march, the women's march. I saw a lot of Black women and women of color saying that, like, they had no interest in the march. They were basically like, you know, where were these people when marching for Black Lives Matter? And they stayed home.
Yeah, so I personally was completely in support of the Women's March. I didn't get out of March because I was loving up on my nieces that weekend because it was an emotionally difficult time that day after the inauguration. But I absolutely understand Black women who say that they're tired. Black women are tired.
Tell me what you're tired of.
Black women are tired because we always show up and that work so often goes unreciprocated. And feeling like you're out fighting alone leads to a really deep kind of resentment. You know, I saw a lot of Black women who are very passionate activists in the current movement for Black lives say, whoa, like, we have been out here marching consistently for the literal survival of Black people, and we have to beg white, quote unquote, allies to show up. And as soon as you feel like your life, your livelihood might be threatened, then that creates the largest mass demonstration in American history, right? Like, I get that rage. I get that sadness. And also because we have to fight on so many fronts. We have to fight not only because we are women, but because we are poor, but because we are Black, because we are queer. And there's not necessarily an understanding that all of the women who showed up for the Women's March get that, and or that they will make an effort post-Women's March to get that.
Do you see any movement from white feminists to reach out to Black feminists to create bridges?
You know, I am still a young person, and I'll say when I first started doing this kind of work, I was very much like, we don't need white women, we'll do it ourselves. Or in the past year, the sort of movement that I've seen in mainstream feminist discourse, the ways that so many non-Black feminists have reached out to me personally and said, thank you, or, you know, your writing or your videos have changed my thinking on this. Where can I go to learn more? Like, that stuff really, it heartens me and it makes me think that we are on a positive trajectory.
What does feminism mean for you?
I love and adore the work of bell hooks, and I really go with her definition of feminism as a movement to end sexist oppression. And that means that we have to deconstruct all of the systems that deter our life chances, that inhibit our life chances. So she calls it white supremacist capitalist patriarchy, and that's what I go with, right? We're trying to bring down the system.
All right, so when I hear you say bring down the system, I flash to another interview that I had with someone who is the exact opposite of you, Richard Spencer. And Richard Spencer is, you know, alt-right, white supremacist. And I think that his goal is to bring down the system as well. So what's the difference between those two visions?
The difference for me as a Black woman is that we are actually victimized by institutionalized oppressions. We are marginalized because we are at the mercy of systems that rely on our exploitation, right? Capitalism relies on the exploited labor of the underclass in order to create, you know, I don't know, like a billionaire class. Richard Spencer, as a white man, reaps many privileges. And also, Richard Spencer is a privileged white man. He is so incredibly privileged within the sorts of systems that we are talking about that literally brutalize and terrorize and kill people who look like me. I think that's the real difference. He is not susceptible to the same sorts of terror.
I guess the real question is, like, what do you want to see America look like when you bring down the system?
State violence looks like many things, right? It's not just the capacity of law enforcement to kill Black people with impunity. It's also Flint, Michigan, where in their homes, a predominantly Black community doesn't have clean drinking water. It also occurs in our public school system, where Black children are more likely to be funneled into the school-to-prison pipeline, or Black girls are more likely to be pushed out of school. And so a vision for the United States looks like a world in which Black people, Black folks, Black men, women, and gender nonconforming people, trans people can live freely, where we have money to meet our basic needs and we have the opportunity to pursue our potential.
What do you think is next for America?
I think that in Trump's America, we can expect large-scale attacks on civil rights, on constitutional rights, but that will also elicit large-scale resistance. I do feel in some ways hopeful about the ways that people have been activated to enact change in their communities and petition their representatives, both locally and nationally, to make sure that their voices are heard.
How do you make intersectional coalitions? Like, how do you reach out to maybe white feminists who don't quite get the experience of Black feminists? How do you reach out to Black men who don't quite get the experience of Black women?
You know what? I believe now that if you do the work, that they will come. I've been doing For Harriet for 6.5 years, and I recognize that there are a certain segment of people who want to know more, who are reachable, and they will gravitate toward you, and they'll have some questions that you think are, you know, ridiculous or annoying, but that you have to engage them earnestly, and you have to be kind of generous when you encounter somebody who is on the brink of being on your side, of being on your team, that you have to be cognizant of the fact that you have the opportunity to bring somebody in, to really convert people. And I take that responsibility very seriously. it gets tricky, right? Because as a Black woman, we're expected to do so much work and so much labor, but I just want to win. I want to win.
Kimberly Foster, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kimberly Foster runs the blog For Harriet. Check out her video commentaries on the For Harriet YouTube channel. This edition of Outlets and Reveals was produced by Emily Harris and edited by Kevin Sullivan. Our sound design team is the Wonder Twins, my man, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Claire C. No Muller. We had engineering help today from Catherine Raimondo and Mary Lee Williams. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.